Since President Donald Trump took office last winter, the country has seen a spike in women around the country running for political office. With the success of the Women's March on Washington and now the growth of the Me Too movement, more and more women are getting their names on the ballot. The Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers University is tracking this increase, and they're seeing about double the number of potential female candidates running for Congress. There are 79 women around the country, they say, running for governorships this year, 51 of them for open seats. I spoke with Kelly Dittmar, a scholar at the center, about this phenomenon they're tracking and why she thinks it's significant for the future of local and national politics.
This is just a much larger pool of women candidates than we've had in previous cycles. And it's significant because we know that if we get more women running, we'll also have more women winning. So we hope that there are signs here of not only expanding the pool for future electoral cycles, but also seeing some gains in 2018.
And who are these women who are running? Have you broken this down by party, by age, anything like that?
At the House level, almost all of the increase from 2016 is among Democratic women and Democratic women running as challengers to incumbents. Mm-hmm. And this is indicative of a trend that I think you're seeing more in the broad culture of progressive women really pushing back against the status quo. At the Senate and gubernatorial level, there are more Democrats than there are Republicans. That's consistent with previous cycles, but they're a little more varied in terms of what type of seats they're running for, so not just concentrated among challengers.
So with a lot of challengers, a lot of people challenging incumbents in these races and a lot of progressives running, is this going to be an uphill battle for most of these women?
Yeah, so I think this is important context because it does put a little caution on these numbers. So we definitely want to celebrate the increase in women candidates, but we go into it with eyes wide open that running as a challenger today in the way our districts are drawn is a tough task. And it will be tough for a high percentage of these women to be successful. And remember that we're talking about pre-primary. So first they got to get through their primaries. And then if they're successful, they get to compete against an incumbent, which is a tough thing to do. However, I will say there, you know, if you look at what happened in Virginia and in Alabama Senate race, if you're talking about Democratic challengers to Republicans, both of those states and the results in those states, I think, provided some hope for Democratic challengers at all levels in 2018.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit about why you think this is happening. I mean, is this all, in your opinion, reaction to Trump's election? I mean, we started with the Women's March last year around this time. Now we have the Me Too movement really taking off. Is all of this, do you think, having a real effect on politics?
I think it's hard to deny that is a significant motivating force, especially when you look at the partisan differences in who's running. I think among women that there is a sense of urgency in this moment, a sense that, you know, yes, I've been engaged in my community, I've been engaged in activism and advocacy before, but at this point, I need to translate that into being at the table, that if I want to hold the line on the policy issues that I care about, and these aren't just quote-unquote women's issues, these are a host of issues that women really are engaged in and care deeply about, that if they want to hold that line, they're going to have to be at the table, they're going to have to be able to cast votes in legislatures.
Yeah, and I want to talk about this also quickly in context, right? Like, are women anywhere near being equally represented in government, even if all of these women were to be elected?
Yeah, we have a lot of work to do. So women are 25% or less of representatives at all of the levels of office we keep nationwide. So when you average, they're less than 20% in Congress, just at 25% of all state legislators nationwide, and again, just about 25% of statewide elected executive officials.
Wow, yeah.
And just a reminder, they're over 50% of the population, right? So it's going to take a little while to increase those numbers. And I should add one more important contextual piece here. In 2018, we're thrilled at the number of women candidates and the increase in women candidates. But if you look at our list of potential candidates, including men, women are still less than 25% of those candidates. And so they're still underrepresented in the candidate pool, even with this increase. And so this year is a point, I think, for us to celebrate progress. but for us also to see that we've got more work to do and we need to sustain this energy, enthusiasm, and even expand it, including to Republican women as we move forward.
All right. Dr. Kelly Dittmar is with the Center for American Women and Politics at Rutgers. Dr. Dittmar, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
In light of this rise of women in politics, we wanted to hear from one woman who has some experience in the area. Debbie McCune Davis was first elected to the Arizona State Legislature in 1978 when she was just 27 years old and a mother with two young kids. Since then, she served on and off as both a House and Senate member for more than three decades. She just left her seat last year. I sat down with her recently to talk about her long career as a woman in local politics and how she was received when she first entered the Capitol building all those years ago.
There were people who questioned my ability to manage my responsibilities, but women were really emerging in community action and activity, and I'd been very involved in my community. And I knew there were things that needed to be addressed. And what I noticed about politics as an observer was that if you could set public policy on the right course, you really did create more opportunity in the future. And looking at it from the perspective of a young person and a young person with children, I understood that as a legislator, a policymaker, I could help build good, solid academic and social infrastructure in the state to help families thrive.
So in the beginning, you said it was a pretty good time to be a woman in the state legislature. Did it change over the years? Did it ebb and flow?
Actually, it got better for a while. You know, it takes a little while because it is an institution. So changing anything in an institution takes time.
Yeah.
But I found more women got elected. We were a bigger part of the conversation. We made a difference. We chaired committees. We took on big issues. And for the most part, we had a sense of unity in doing that. But issues of concern to women really changed over time, and pretty soon it became evident that economic issues and all issues became important to women. But I'll give you an example. One of the things that I started out very excited about was a tax credit for childcare. So I rounded up support in the community and introduced my bill. And the chairman of the committee who was hearing the bill agreed to hold a hearing. And so we lined everybody up and we talked about how young families who were now women now in the workforce with kids needed some financial help. I lost that proposal. It did not proceed because the chairman of the committee came from a philosophy that said women belonged in the home and that families that sacrificed to keep the mother at home with her children shouldn't have to subsidize families who didn't make that decision. So that was that became a lesson to me to understand that maybe my idea wasn't quite ready yet. Over time, as more women entered the workforce, frankly, because it's what the economy required, that idea took hold. And in fact, we now have tax credits for that. But when I brought it up, I was a little ahead of the time.
Yeah, I bet. So in terms of the culture at the state legislature, there was just a recent Republic article about sexual harassment in the state legislature. I wonder, what did you see over the years? Is this something that concerned you?
I think it was evident to me at that time that there were some people who maintained traditional views, and they were going to treat women consistent with their belief system. But there were others who were open to working with us as colleagues. And over time, the individuals who worked with us as colleagues got better. You know, we all have that story of the sitting in committee and the chairman sort of grabbing and saying, could you refill my coffee cup for me? And, you know, I had that happen too.
Were there women, especially because in Arizona's history, we've had so many women who have been political leaders, from governors to the executive branch to the state legislature, where we still have more women than most state legislatures around the country. Were there women in your career that you were able to kind of bring up and mentor, or did you have someone like that?
I worked with some really interesting and dynamic women and learned to respect their points of view because we didn't always agree. But one of the early issues I worked on in the legislature was doing some updating of domestic violence laws. Mm-hmm. And I rallied the support of all of the women in the legislature except one. And that individual ended up going on to be Speaker of the House and Governor of the state, Jane D. Hull. And once she was Speaker, she was then open to working with us on everything. And we did get the bill through. Mm-hmm. It did succeed. She was the only one who wasn't willing to sign on as a co-sponsor on the bill at that time because she had her eye on leadership. And it just shows you the fine line that women sometimes have to walk in order to advance in the power structure. And it's always about the power.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So did you feel like as a woman over all of those decades in the state legislature, there were always challenges, more challenges for you than there would have been for a male colleague?
Yes, absolutely. But we learned to work with that, and we learned to build the necessary relationships to get things done.
So you decided not to run the last election and turn over the seat to someone else. But throughout the country right now, we're really seeing a momentum of women running, probably in relationship with the Women's March and the Me Too movement and in reaction to Donald Trump's presidency. You're seeing a lot of progressive women step up and say, I want to fight this. What advice would you give them?
Well, I understand that feeling because up until Election Day, there was a belief in the community that we would have our first woman president. And there are a lot of folks who are not only disappointed in the outcome, but very frustrated with what they've seen since then. And women are problem solvers, and that's a generalization, but I think there's a lot of truth in it. So going to serve in public office is a way to take on a problem. And so there are a lot of women who are interested. There are a lot of programs that are training women how to run for office and how to be good public servants. And I encourage them to get involved, but I encourage them to get involved in solving the problem, even if it's not running for office. We need to build that bench of folks who can come into office and really sustain change, not just go in and fight a battle and win that battle.
So as we see these women run for office in this new tide, what difference do you think that might make? If there are more women in local government, what kind of changes do you predict we'll see?
Well, there are women in the legislature who come from recent immigrant backgrounds, women who come from education backgrounds, women who come from social work backgrounds, women who come from business, from industry. And what they bring is knowledge and experience. And I think they contribute substantively in a very positive way to the process. So my hope is that we have more of that. And if there are men who come into the process with that same attitude about bringing what they know, that's okay too. But for me, a woman who's got good life experience and good skills, who offers herself as a public servant, deserves support.
Debbie McCune Davis was a longtime legislator in Arizona. Today, she serves as the executive director of the Arizona Partnership for Immunization.